Welcome to The Scene, presented by The Fragrant Mushroom in Sparta. I'm your host, Emily Newman, and today we're talking with Josh Barnwell of Be Well Designs. Hi, Josh. How are you today?
Hi, pretty good.
Good. Thanks for coming out of the woods and talking with us.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.
So, I found you on Instagram, and I see that you do a lot of naturalist, artistic creations, and so what exactly is it that you do and you specialize in?
Well, I kind of follow the seasons with my work. So during the spring and summer, I make these bark backpacks that are all peeled out of tulip poplar bark, which is Tennessee state tree. The only reason why I can only do those during spring and summer is because when the sap is up, I can peel the bark off the tree. Mm. And so that's kind of like a narrow window that I have to get in and make all my projects out of that for the year. So I follow the seasons a lot with my work. And so spring and summer is bark season. And then in the fall, I work on hides and leather making because that's the season for that. And then during the winter, I usually do mostly like wood carving, just green wood carving and working on things like that.
Great. Yeah. So how old were you when you took an interest in creating things out of nature?
That's a hard one to put a number on. I feel like I've always been interested in nature and at least even just being in nature. And so it was kind of a natural springboard to start making stuff from what was around me. So when I was about 9 or 10, I carved my first spoon. I went to the woods and I found a stick and I just wanted something to do. And so I spent the whole afternoon with my knife carving and whittling and working on it and made just a very crude, rude, old little wooden spoon, but my mom still has it.
I was going to ask, that was my next question. You still have it.
Yeah.
And did you know what you were doing?
Not really. I didn't have any formal training at the time.
You weren't a Boy Scout?
I actually quit Boy Scouts because I didn't learn what I wanted to learn.
You're like, I can do this better.
Yeah. Thanks. After a year in the Boy Scouts, I decided I wasn't, you know, we weren't camping, we weren't doing stuff that I wanted to do, so I just went and learned it myself.
That's impressive. So no internet?
No just, internet.
Just totally just picking this stuff up on your own.
Book learning and just haunting the shelves and just researching. It's always been kind of a passion of mine, and so I've just always, every chance I got, I would teach myself as much as I could and try to find new resources everywhere I could.
So how would you say living in Tennessee and the culture of the Upper Cumberland has inspired your work? It's got to be very inspirational.
Yeah, I hadn't really considered that before until I until really that question came up. And but looking on it, I mean, it's impossible to not be influenced by that culture. I feel like when I think about the culture of the Upper Cumberland, I think about, you know, and just Appalachia in general, I think a lot about like that culture of self-reliance and community and just sort of getting things done with what you have around you. And I feel like that shows in my work a lot, where it's, you know, more directly inspired by nature and the materials that are found there.
Do you find that just on a day-to-day basis, are you always creating?
I'm always at least thinking about creating. Right. I have 3 kids, and so that takes a lot of time, and we homeschool them, and I also work at home, so home life can get hectic. And but since so much of my work is seasonal, I'm kind of always chasing those seasons and trying to fit in stuff before it's past time. I spend a good bit of my time with creating, or at least planning a creation.
And your kids and your wife are understanding that dad needs to be creative right now.
They're actually really cool about it. Yeah. We've had some time to kind of train them, and I'm so blessed with a wife that is cool with me dragging in stinky things to turn into leather, and I've actually gotten her into doing some of the leather working and hide tanning, and so that's been really cool, because I don't know where I'd be if I didn't have an understanding partner.
Welcome to The Scene, presented by The Fragrant Mushroom in Sparta. I'm your host, Emily Newman, And today we're chatting with Will Winton of Bespoke Furniture. How are you today, Will?
I'm doing great, and good. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming out. So you recently designed and trademarked the Winton Guitar Chair. What was the process from start to finish that brought this wonderful design to life?
Well, thank you. The process started actually in June. I was at a crafts and arts fair in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. And it's about 15 minutes before closing, and it was a hot afternoon, and this young woman comes up and sits in one of my chairs, and she moves around, and she looked at me and said, "Have you ever thought of adding a footrest to this and maybe a place where you can put some picks and a hanger for your guitar?" And she made the point that my chairs have very wide bottoms but very thin backs. And she said, "You know, when I'm playing in a regular chair, my elbows are always hitting the back of the chair.
Yeah.
With this, I have a full range of motion, but the seat is wide enough." On the ride back home, I just started thinking about it. I said, "You know, it wouldn't be really hard to create a footrest and a place to put picks and a hanger for a guitar." So the following week, I developed the first prototype. And so I invited a friend of mine who's a semi-professional guitar player over. And he came in and looked at it and sat down and started playing. And he played for the next hour and a half. And he looked at me and said, "Dude, you know, I don't know what you're going to be doing with this, but whatever you do, do it." And I started inviting other musicians, mandolin players, banjo players, and they all said the same thing. You know, they can really start focusing on their performance. And that's sort of the tagline to my guitar chair, is that it becomes part of your performance. So over the past couple of months, I've been working in collaboration with a third-generation metalsmith who takes my designs and creates sort of the metal parts to create this chair that allows a picker just to concentrate on playing their instrument and performing and in comfort. And that's what all of the pickers who've sat in my chairs have said, is it's so comfortable.
Yeah.
So I'm looking to market it not only to musicians, but a friend of mine is a songwriter, and he says songwriters sit down for hours on end with their instrument and, you know, a notepad to write songs. And he was like, "I could sit for hours and do nothing but compose." And the added benefit is that this is functional sculpture. So at the end of the day, they can hang their Martin D28 or whatever, their Fender on the back of their guitar chair and stand back, and the chair and the instrument become as one. And it's not just any old chair. It's a piece of beautiful sculpture that becomes part of their performance, that allows them to expand their musical creativity. And that's really what I want. I want something that will allow my musician creator friends to create even more wonderful music.
Now I need an artist chair. Where can we find your work?
You can find my work at my website, willwinton.com. I'm also on Instagram at WCWinton. And I will be exhibiting around the mid-state area pretty much for the next couple of months. But if you go to my website, I will have a listing of where I will be exhibiting. And of course, you can reach out to me directly.
Wonderful. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Welcome to The Scene, presented by The Fragrant Mushroom in Sparta. I'm your host, Emily Newman, and today we're talking with Josh Barnwell of Be Well Designs. Speaking of tanning hide, what's the process involved in that from start to finish? Because I don't know anything about it. So
the process that I do is called brain tanning. And it uses, traditionally it uses the animal's own brain, but I more commonly use egg yolks. to make the hide soft and luxurious. And so the first step of the process is scraping the hide. So I scrape the flesh side and I scrape the hair side. I scrape all the hair off. And then I put it in the dressing, which is typically egg yolks now, but traditionally would have been the brains, which sounds weird, but there's an emulsified oil found in the egg yolks and the brains called lecithin. And that's an oil that can be suspended in water. So you're mixing that with water to allow the hide, each fiber of the hide, to get a tiny little coating of that oil. So after I scrape, I immerse it in the brain solution and I wring it out between two sticks. And I do that a few different times to make sure that it gets as much of the oils as possible. Then I start pulling and stretching and working around different tools. I have a cable and a beam that I'll push and scrape and pull the hide over. And what that does is keeps the fibers of the hide moving while they dry and keeps the glues from setting up in the hide. So I stretch and pull and work it and put in all that elbow grease that kind of... In brain tanning, we substitute elbow grease and work for a lot of the chemicals that are used in commercial tanning. And so I work the hide until it's dry. And then after it's dried, it comes out incredibly soft and fluffy. But if it gets wet, it'll turn back into a stiff, hard hide. So the final step is smoking the hide. And that's where the hide gets all of its color. And it, the smoke actually deactivates some of the glues that are in the hide. And so you can machine wash them if you want and then just line dry and they come out soft again.
So what are some of the products that you make with the hide?
I do a lot of bags and pouches. I also take orders for like custom clothing and moccasins. I also use it in some of my other work, like jewelry or just kind of accents to some of the other projects that I make, like the bark bags.
You ever make a couch?
Not yet, but that'd be a cool thing to try.
Or just like a cover to a chair? Or...
I actually have been talking to a couple of custom motorcycle people about doing a custom bike build.
Yeah.
And covering all the seats with buckskin and doing some like saddlebags out of bark. And that's a project that I've been mulling over for a while that I want to try.
So when you create things, are you looking at it from a naturalist viewpoint or survival viewpoint?
I don't really like survival so much because to me that conjures this image of like man versus wild. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's something to overcome and battle. But I don't want to survive. I want to be thriving.
Yes.
And so... From a naturalist point of view, I'd say with a healthy dose of thrivalism, mm-hmm. is kind of where I view myself. I look at my place, I look at human beings and our place in nature as creatures, and we're the only creatures that separate ourselves from the rest of the entire world, the natural world. And so for me, a lot of this is about finding my place as a human creature in nature and like finding that place where humans can interact with nature and to really continue being part of it.
The Scene, brought to you by The Fragrant Mushroom in Sparta. It's where we discover and uncover artists and their art from around the Upper Cumberland.
Hi, this is Liz Casera, and I am with Sandy Miller, a local ceramics.
Hi, Liz. Thank you for talking to me. I actually started out getting into ceramics when I lost my job as a graphic designer, which was my career position. And my girlfriend called up one day and said, oh, I'm thinking of taking a ceramics class. I said, great. Where shall we go? I got so excited about it. After a year, I went back and I got my Bachelor of Fine Arts at Southern Illinois University. And then we ended up moving here to Cookeville about 9 years ago, a place I love more than anything. I think we really made the great decision of moving to Cookeville. And my mom died 2 weeks after we got here, but she left me a small annuity. And it was enough to cover my husband building me out a ceramic studio in my home. And it just has worked out great. So literally since 2013, I started doing ceramics here, and I've slowly but surely developed my style, which is what I call obsessive details, because I have so many different layers on my pieces, and I carve and I stamp, and then I do three different layers of different types of glazes on top of each other.
That's one thing that I do. I want to hear more about, like, how that process was, because your stuff is very vibrant. It's very full of texture. It's almost like you are entering another world when you look at a piece. And I wanted to know, how did you get to that spot?
Well, testing was what my original professor said. And it's been an evolution, because I do underglazes, which are hand painted in. But I was always told, well, when you use underglazes, you put clear glazes over the top of it. Nobody had ever tried testing, to my knowledge, their other glazes on top of it. So I started doing that and found that I was getting really interesting effects, because some of the glazes would pool on top of other glazes, and I would, if I multi-layered the glazes on top of each other, they would actually run and create these really, really cool blending effects, kind of like the Northern Lights with a little bit more color than just the green, but just as cool. And so then I started doing glaze trailing on top of that, and then everything gets a final dip. And I use a mid-fire clay, which gets fired to around 2200 degrees Fahrenheit. The clay is really strong and durable, and the glazes that I use are all dishwasher, microwave safe, food safe. And I know that because I got it from the Mastering Cone 6 book, and they constantly test to see if glazes are leaching or if there's an improper fit between the clay and the glaze, which can cause the glazes to crack and shatter.
Gotcha. So you have done your research really well, and it's a wonderful gift that your mother left as a legacy for you to be able to do this. Was this something that you were interested in as a young girl growing up, that you thought you'd get into the art realm?
Well, the minute I touched it, I was in love. I mean, there's something so great about the tactileness of the clay. And a lot of my imagery in my clay was a result of me diving and teaching diving for 22 years. So I have things that relate to corals and sponges and the textures, the undulation of the underwater world. And when I mention, people don't really recognize that right away, but when I mention that, it's like lights come on and they say, oh, I can see it in your work.
Do you have a website, or what's your social media feed?
I do both Facebook. It's millerarts.net. I have my own website. It's millerarts.net. So they can check either of those platforms.
Helping guide you on the path to a new craft. It's your art on the scene.
Welcome to The Scene, presented by The Fragrant Mushroom in Sparta. I'm your host, Emily Newman, and today we're talking with Josh Barnwell of Be Well Designs. Do you do festivals? Like, how do you showcase your work?
I do some festivals. I'm going to be vending at the Biodynamic Conference in Red Boiling Springs this weekend. Nice. And then I'll be on the Art Prowl here in Cookville.
Do you know where you'll be set
November.
Up?
November. I'll be at the WCTE building.
Wonderful.
Yeah. So this will be my first year showing on Art Prowl, so I'm excited about that.
Art Prowl is an amazing event. It's kind of how I got my start selling awesome. Art. Yeah, it's just, and it's fun too, because you have a lot of people coming in a two-day period, and you get all this feedback on your art, and it's really beautiful. It's an amazing experience. You're going to have so much fun.
I'm looking forward to it.
So where does your inspiration come from to further your desire to be an accomplished naturalist?
I'd say some of the inspiration comes from my kids, and just like the, you know, the world that we're going to be leaving for them. And so I feel like a lot of my pursuit of the skills is, it's been so directly beneficial to my life personally. And, you know, the confidence that comes from being able to start with nothing and make the raw materials for a project and, you know, continue it on and make something so much bigger out of it. Really, you know, spreading these skills and awareness of them and the creativity and connection that really comes into play with learning about them is a big part of it. And also just the natural world around us, the seasons that continue turning and the trees that grow and just the land around us is very directly inspiring. And the more I learn, the more I know I have to learn.
Are your children, how old are your children?
So I have a 10-month-old, a 5-year-old, and a 9-year-old.
So are they participating in creating things naturally like you?
Yeah. When Ezra was 8, I got him his first pocket knife. And so we started carving things together. And then last year, I got my daughter her first pocket knife. And she was so happy, she cried.
It was like
one of those yes moments, yeah. You know. And so it was just seeing how much that meant to her and how much that she just was so touched by it. It's really incredible.
Is she creating anything?
Yeah, she loves to draw and she's done some carving. We have paraffin blocks for her to carve with her knife. And then the first wood project that they both decided to try was making a spear, because that's a classic. A little pointy stick.
Yes. So, my kids do that too.
Yeah.
They love to make those.
And I remember doing that too, you know, and like just having a knife and being outside and playing with my brother and making up games.
And creating,
yeah.
It just feels so good.
Yeah. I think a big part of creativity is just the ability to play.
Yeah.
And so that's part of why we homeschool our kids, is just we want them to have that access to play and to be surrounded by nature and even, you know, to be bored for a while.
Be bored because you know, my kids get bored a lot and I'm like, guys, be bored, because when you're bored, you find what you're passionate about.
Yes.
You're almost forced. You're back into a corner. I was very bored as a child.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to be bored anymore. So I just started drawing. And then that became like my sanctuary.
Yes.
And it just evolved from there. But being bored is actually good.
Yeah, there's actually a bunch of studies now that where it's like, being bored leads to some of your biggest creative discoveries.
Oh, absolutely.
And I've definitely experienced that personally.
Yeah, for sure. So it sounds like your kids are on the right track to be creative just like you, and to make a difference in the world, and to get us to see that there is like resources all around us, like nature and humans we're married.
Yeah.
And yeah. We'd kind of divorced it and we need to get back.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have a yard that's mostly what people call weeds. But since our kids, you know, when my daughter was a year and a half old, it was springtime and she was toddling around and I took her out to the yard and the violets and dandelions were coming up. And I showed them to her, and I showed her that these ones, if you ask first, you can eat. So flash forward a year later, she's 2.5, and she goes out in the yard, and she recognized them a year later.
Yes.
And was like, oh, we eat these ones.
I saw that on your Instagram,
yeah.
The plate of food that y'all made with the violets.
Mm-hmm.
That was really beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
That was a work of art in itself, you know?
Thank you, yeah.
So wonderful. Well, thank you so much for coming on today. And it was very informative and inspiring. And I hope that you inspired someone today. So thank you. Appreciate
thank you.
It. Welcome to The Scene, presented by The Fragrant Mushroom in Sparta. I'm your host, Emily Newman. And today we are chatting with Susan Stone. Thanks for coming in today.
I'm happy to be here.
Great. So can you give me a rundown on what it is exactly that you do?
Well, what I do is I create whimsical pottery. They're all my original designs, usually, you know, birds and flowers and things like that, coffee mugs, platters, that sort of thing.
All right. And how old were you when you took an interest in the arts?
I can't remember not taking an interest in the arts. I was thinking about this morning. My first studio was in my bedroom closet when I was a little girl. I had pulled my clothes back and I had drawn on all the walls.
Wow.
I've always been interested in drawing and doodling and creating things with my hands.
So then how did the drawing and doodling transform into working with ceramics?
That took a minute. I wasn't sure how to get, you know, my drawing onto the pots for a long time. I was really interested in being able to throw pottery. It was something that I'd seen when I was a little girl, and it was mesmerizing. I think a lot of people can understand that. And I'd always wanted to learn. So that was one of my, you know, great desires to educate myself on. And then the drawing just naturally picked up later, and here we are.
So did anybody in your family work with ceramics?
No, my dad, he was a geologist, but he did woodworking. You know, he'd build furniture for the family in his spare time. And my mom was, you know, mom, but she also sewed all our clothes. And when we grew out of that, she was a quilter and she did a lot of needlework. And so I had a lot of creative people around me.
So if I want to purchase one of your pieces, where can I find you? Where can I see your work?
Well, you know, I have a studio here locally in Cookeville, and I also have an online presence. So I have my website, susanstonedesign.com.